The Max Kellerman Show, the podcast.
The Cowboys, since 2010, on average, win 8.5 and lose 7.5 games. They're a tick above average. That's what they are. Stephen Jones, real good GM, considering his daddy owns the team and that's why he has the job. It's an amazing job. Like, you understand, most GMs in the NFL have a lifetime of experience, but not just that. They've had to grind their way up and work their way up the ladder, and then they get the job because they're better than the people around them. That's not Stephen Jones. His daddy owns the team, so he got the job eventually. Not that he hadn't paid dues, but that's the reason he has the job. Unlikely, therefore, that he'd be a tick above average. It's hard to be an average NFL GM. It's a hard job. And he's better than just average by a little bit. But that's why the Cowboys are not great, because they have an above-average GM, but not an elite GM. And that's because Jerry Jones' ego can't take the story being anyone about anyone other than himself. So his son runs the team with him, and the coach can't be a guy who's going to get more credit than Jerry. So it can be Mike McCarthy, but it can't be Jimmy Johnson or Bill Parcells. And that's why so-called America's team is a tick above average. That's it. And that's why they lost to the Seahawks. Well, I mean, look, the specific answers in this case are Russell Wilson's a little better than, well, he was better than Dak Prescott. Dak Prescott was very good against a bad Seattle pass defense. And Russell Wilson was even better against a bad Dallas pass defense. Here's Pete Carroll on after the game on Russell Wilson's ability to bounce back in the final drive.
We're so accustomed to it, we absolutely are just anticipating that we're going to go score. And you know, Russ and I, there was a moment in there, we said, you know, field goal wins it. And then we looked at each other and said, we're going for a touchdown. it was really cool to see him compete again like he does.
Russell Wilson's one of the greatest quarterbacks of all time, and he's in his absolute prime, and he's certainly one of the five best quarterbacks in the world, and some would say he's the best quarterback in the world and the best football player in the world right now, and they have a hell of a case. I would put him third behind Patrick Mahomes 1, Aaron Rodgers 2, and Russell Wilson. But I think you maybe the most provable case over the last, let's say, 3 years or 5 years, like who's been the best quarterback over that time? Russell Wilson. You know, some players are like that. In no one year would you say, he definitely is the best this year. But if you took a 3 or 5 year span, they're the best over 3 or 5 years, which is very impressive. And that's Russell Wilson. And maybe this year he's also just the best. I'd take him third. The Cowboys, to me, are the story, though. I thought once they traded for Jamal Anderson. Jamal Adams. Who I thought even in that draft, as it turns out, he wasn't the best player in the draft. But I thought, if you want to make sure you take a player in this draft with the highest floor, Jamal Adams is going to be an excellent NFL player. And he is. Well, I know usually a safety doesn't tip the balance, but look what Minkah Fitzpatrick did for the Steelers last year. Jamal Adams, once they made that move on the Seahawks, I thought, okay, and DK Metcalf's a year older. Seahawks are the best team in the conference. The Dallas Cowboys lost to the best team in the conference, maybe? Certainly one of them. No big deal, right? They made it a game. Yeah. They're 1-2 now. It's the bottom line. And they were lucky to get the one win. Lucky to beat the Falcons. They can't rely on an entire special teams unit not jumping on an onside kick with a game on the line. Right? That's not something you can rely on consistently. Otherwise, they're 0-3. But I don't think they're an 0-3 type team. I think they're an 8-8 type team like every year. 9-7, 8-8. That's the Cowboys. For every time they go 10 or 11 win or 12 win season, they have a 10 or 11 or 12 win loss season. You know, like that's since 2010. I'm not making it up. Last year they were 8-8. The year before, 9-7. 10-6. You know what that averaged out to? 9-7. But they're 1-2 this year, bringing it below 9-7. And then going back all the way to 2010, those years, 8.5 and 7.5. They on average win 8.5 games, they lose 7.5. That's them. Tick above average. Well, every year they're loaded with talent, I guess, although how much of that is, yes, they have a lot of talent, but how much of that is they're so heavily publicized that we are familiar with the players on the team? Meantime, Rams fans, and listen, I like the Rams. I was out in L.A. when they got them, when they got them back. They're actually the heritage team. I mean, you know, the Raiders are still the most popular professional football team in L.A. But the Rams are the heritage team. And with the best history, by the way, in L.A. And I wish them well. I hope they do well. You didn't get robbed, Rams fans. You didn't, like, they were coming back on the Bills. And you don't want to see a game decided in a high leverage moment by a bad call. It wasn't the worst call I ever saw, but I think the refs probably blew that call, right? But really what we're upset about is an epic comeback was stalled out by a referee blowing the whistle. Right? By extracurricular stuff. And they got it wrong, probably. Like, you could maybe call that, I don't know. But listen, if Josh Allen doesn't get the pass off, you don't get the pass interference call. Luck is the residue of design. Josh Allen scored 5 TDs, 4 touchdowns, and a touchdown run. Threw for 4, rushed for 1. 5 TDs. That's not getting robbed on a call. That's a great young quarterback, which is what he looks like so far this year. Having a great game and digging you a hole that you had to, that you couldn't quite get out of. Tom Brady had a big game. I mean, you know, against the Broncos team that is terrible. Big deal. Aaron Rodgers. Drew Brees looked pretty good. Aaron Rodgers. Oh, my God. Maybe they were smart in Green Bay. Gutekunst, right? The GM. Instead of drafting a receiver, because this was even without Devontae Adams yesterday. Instead of drafting a receiver, draft Aaron Rodgers' replacement before you even know him. Light a fire under Rodgers, who just went 13-3 and now is in year 2 of a system he understands better. Coach takes the handcuffs off him a little bit, lets him do his Aaron Rodgers thing. By the way, they were 13-3 with a playoff win against Seattle last year, and they're better this year. Pass protection's better. Aaron Rodgers looks... Oh, there's no one I'd rather have other than Patrick Mahomes than Aaron Rodgers. Rodgers looks incredible so far. He looks back to his prime self. 888-SAY-ESPN. By the way, not only was Wentz terrible, Joe Burrow, Lord, this dude is, this rookie was the best quarterback on the field. And how many guys would you want over Joe Burrow over the next 3 or 5 years? He's going to be really, really good. John in New Jersey, you're on the Max Kellerman Show, ESPN Radio.
Yeah, hey, Max. I know Wentz didn't play well yesterday. I thought he played well. I thought he did play better than he did the past weeks 1 and 2. I wouldn't consider trading him. What I would do is, would you consider trading Zach Ertz for some offensive line help, even though the Eagles have Dallas Goedert also, who is a proven commodity? Would you consider trading Zach Ertz for maybe Zach Martin for some offensive line help? The Eagles have the Niners, the Steelers, and the Ravens the next 3 weeks. So it's going to be,
I think you're badly overrating Wentz right now. I think Wentz has regressed shockingly. I think he's a mess right now. I think he was much more reliant upon Frank Reich than I realized. He's one of the worst quarterbacks in football this year. Wentz is capable of doing things that are eye-popping. But he doesn't do them consistently. What he does consistently is make bad decisions, resist the coach's offense, doesn't like to run RPOs, forces the ball, tries to play hero ball, poorly executes on several passes if he happens to come up with one miracle-type pass. He's really bad right now. He's one of the worst starters in football right now. I don't think it's like, hey, first of all, integrating an offensive line piece is no small thing. Sometimes takes like a year or more. Even if you bring in a veteran. So, like, to try to salvage the Eagles' season because they play in a bad division right now by making a move, by trading your best offensive player, it's not something I would do if I were the Eagles. News from Max Kellerman Nation. Look at this. I have a whole nation. John just hit us up on the Dr. Pepper call-in line. All right, where's John? John is the... Yes, John in New Jersey. That was him. Right, I see how this works now. I'm quick on the uptake there, Raj. Brian in Nutley, you're on the Max Kellerman Show, ESPN Radio. Brian.
Thanks for calling, man. Thanks for having me. I wanted to call and talk about Sam Darnold, man. I mean, listen, what I see is a dumpster fire. There's a lot of pundits out there. I really can't call you to task too much with it. I don't know if that's you. But everyone talks about how nice this guy is, and he's a can't-miss talent. What's your take on that, man?
I thought Sam Darnold was going to be a good quarterback for a long time. A B+, right? For a while. I don't think he was going to be great, but I thought he was going to be good for a while. And it just goes to show you, it's not just drafting and identifying talent, because there aren't that many can't-miss talents, a quarterback especially, right? Very dependent upon the coaching environment. And so I didn't think Darnold was immune to, like, a bad situation, right? A lot of it's development. It's drafting and development. Darnold is with a sorry franchise, and it stalled his development. But I think he has the potential to be, even still, a good quarterback for a number of years. Never thought he'd be great, but I still think he could be good. Christy in Pittsburgh, you're on the Max Kellerman Show, ESPN Radio.
Hi, Max. How are you?
Good, Christy. How are you?
Good, thank you. I just want to talk to you about Carson Wentz. I think you are throwing him under the bus way too soon. I mean, we're in a pandemic. Guys are getting hurt left and right. Mm-hmm. I think you're expecting a gourmet meal when there's no ingredients to make it with, you know?
I don't know. Last year,
Well, look,
I thought Wentz was terrific in 16-17, really 2016. I thought he was the MVP until he got hurt. I thought he was okay the next year. I didn't think he was great. I thought last year he was really bad in the second half of the season when he was getting all this credit for lifting his team. In fact, what I identified was poor decision-making and poor execution. You know, he had some eye-popping stuff that made people think, playing hero ball, that made people think that he was really good, including me. Like, oh, my God, it reminds you what he did in 2016. Followed by, he'd make this, oh, my God, did you see that throw? Followed by, you know, bad decision, bad throw, bad throw. It was like a 3-to-1 ratio. And he was in the sorriest division maybe ever in the NFC East last year. And then when you look, you know, he got healthy against the Cowboys, but especially like the Giants and Washington. And then when you looked at what the other quarterbacks in the division were doing against those teams, a rookie in Daniel Jones, backups in Washington, right? When you, all the other quarterbacks in the division were beating the teams Carson Wentz was getting healthy against better than he was. They were playing against those teams better than he was. Let's not forget, late in the game, in the fourth quarter, on third down, in high leverage moments, Wentz would kill them with turnovers. Sometimes they got lucky and recovered the ball, but he was killing them. I thought he was bad then. Now, many people, including Dan Orlovsky, who is a tremendous football analyst, by the way, best breaking down film, or at least the best expositor of football ideas while breaking down film of anyone I've seen since John Gruden was doing it, right? On ESPN, on TV. But I think he has a soft spot for Wentz, and I disagreed with him about this. And I was saying last year, Wentz is not good, guys. Certainly not elite. If you want to say the talent makes him top 15 or something, I'm not going to argue with you, but top 5, top 10, are you crazy? You know who saw what I saw? The Eagles front office. Howie Roseman, instead of packaging the second round pick to move up and get CeeDee Lamb, drafted Jalen Hurts in the second round. They just won the division. They drafted a quarterback in the second round. They just gave a contract, $120 million whatever contract to Carson Wentz, drafted a quarterback in the second round. Well, it's because he's injury prone. They're hedging. Get out of here. They want depth at back quarterback. Stop it. You can get those guys. Nick Foles. Nick Foles is still floating around. Who won you a Super Bowl? No, they saw what I saw. The man was regressing. And he has regressed further. This is not something new. This is a continuation of what we saw last year. By the way, meantime, Nick Foles. I want to give him credit where credit's due. Nick Foles under Chip Kelly. First, let's go back to the Pac-12. I moved to L.A. to do L.A. radio. I wasn't so deep into the Pac-12 back then, right? Like, who cares, really? SC faced all those problems, and they weren't a powerhouse anymore, and who really cares, right? I was told how great Matt Barkley was playing for the Trojans. And so I start watching Pac-12 a lot, and because we're talking about it on the air. And I notice clearly Andrew Luck is what people are saying. He's great. He's better than everyone else. Who's the second best? I heard a lot about Matt Barkley, and I heard a lot about Brock Osweiler. They wanted Barkley to be the guy. Osweiler was tall. That's all. Very tall. But he was okay. Nick Foles was clearly the second best quarterback in the Pac-12 behind Andrew Luck. And I remember SC going to Arizona and getting Nick Foles dicing him, slicing him and dicing him. I thought, ooh, this guy's good. Then he gets drafted. He plays for Chip Kelly. 27 touchdowns, 2 interceptions. People still don't believe in him for some reason. Goes to Jeff Fisher. He's awful. I mean, like, if you're with Chip Kelly, you're really good. With Jeff Fisher, you're really bad. If you give him the right coach, he can really produce. Now, with the Eagles later on, he gets back to the Eagles later on. As Carson Wentz's backup, Wentz is having this amazing MVP year, but Foles is the guy who takes over and leads them on that improbable run through the playoffs and wins Super Bowl MVP. And he does it by lifting his team when they need him to and by getting his team to believe. He has this effect. He's one of these pixie dust players. He makes people want to play with this guy, clearly. And then the next year, Carson Wentz is only okay and they're going to miss the playoffs. Nick Foles takes over when Wentz gets hurt. Plays them into the playoffs. Leads them to the playoffs. They go on a winning streak late. Make the playoffs. They go to Soldier Field. They're supposed to get killed by the Bears defense. Don't forget last year. A lot of people were saying. Was this last year or 2 years ago? I'm already forgetting. The point is, a lot of people, it's 2 years ago. A lot of people were saying that the Bears defense makes them Super Bowl contenders. They may come out of the NFC. Nick Foles beat them. He led the Eagles to a win at Soldier Field. Now, if that's not a tough enough place to play, you got to go play New Orleans at New Orleans in the Dome. And they were the favorites in the NFC. By the way, he almost beat the Saints at the Saints after beating the Bears at Chicago. That was, like, you're not, like, very seldom does a team go back-to-back Super Bowl wins, right? But Nick Foles, who's a Super Bowl MVP, that was a worthy title defense, right? The champion went out, but he went out with a road win against first playing his team into the playoffs, then a road win against Chicago, and very nearly a road win against New Orleans. Then he goes to Jacksonville. They're no good. They're not a good team. They looked a little better than they actually were. Not a good team, and he didn't do well, just like he didn't do well with Jeff Fisher. And now he gets traded to Chicago. And Mitch Trubisky, an athletic quarterback, it's hard to tell. Mitch Trubisky, Josh Allen, Lamar Jackson, like, who's going to be the best among them? Lamar Jackson has been great. Josh Allen is ascending and now looks great. Mitch Trubisky's not good. It's hard to tell with prospects, especially athletic quarterbacks. Who's going to be able to develop the accuracy down the field and the decision-making? Lamar Jackson, check. Josh Allen, check so far. Mitch Trubisky, no. But they get Nick Foles to back him up. And what happens yesterday? Oh, I don't know. He comes in and throws 3 touchdowns in the fourth quarter to win the game. This dude, it's not a mirage with Nick Foles. If you give him the right coaching, Nick Foles is a killer. A killer. And his teammates obviously love him. They play better when he is the quarterback everywhere he goes, whenever he has the right coaching. This is nothing new. This is not a mirage. He was great in college. He was great early in his career with the right coaching. He was great with the right coaching when he got his chance with the Eagles. I expect him to be great in Chicago.
The Max Kellerman Show, the podcast.
The Max Kellerman Show on ESPN Radio, ESPN News, the ESPN app, and SiriusXM Channel 80 and on your smart speaker. 888-SAY-ESPN, 888-729-3776. That's 888. I'm going so fast. All the promos I have to read and the sponsorships. The unparalleled success, Raj, is giving me too much to read. 888-SAY-ESPN, 888-729-3776. The Max Kellerman Show is presented by Progressive Insurance. All guests join us on the Shell Pennzoil Performance Line. So, the heater in. They beat the Celtics. I thought the Celtics would win that series in 7, even with Gordon Hayward healthy for the first 2 games. I now think the Heat were going to win this series because when it mattered most, the Heat were better than the Celtics. Tatum's not quite ready to lead a team to the promised land. I think he will be soon. Meantime, Jimmy Butler's got a lot of help. Not just Tyler Hero, who at the age of 20 is doing some superstar things in these playoffs. But of course, Goran Dragic, who was the unsung hero for a lot of the playoffs. Duncan Robinson, who there's a difference between a three-point specialist. Oh, that guy shoots, you know, he's a three-point specialist. And a guy like Duncan Robinson, he's an elite three-point specialist. And, of course, Bam Adebayo, who is, look, Kendrick Perkins isn't wrong. When he said he's the third best big in the game, maybe. He's certainly an elite big in this modern NBA. Here he is talking about having to face LeBron James and the Lakers.
We underdogs, man. Nobody thought we could get this far, but we're going to go out and play hard. We're underdogs, like I always say. So you just go out there, play hard, and we toss the ball up and then see who wins.
Well, you are underdogs, Bam, but plenty of people thought you could get this far, including me. Like, usually in the NBA, there are only two or maybe three teams who you think really have a chance to win a title. But to tell you the truth, going into these playoffs, I thought Clippers were going to win. I was wrong. I thought Mavericks had a chance. I thought the Nuggets and the Jazz maybe on the outside, it would not be impossible, but I didn't think so. The Lakers obviously had a chance. I did not think Portland would win. I thought in the East, the Bucks, Raptors, Celtics, not the Sixers once Simmons got hurt. Bucks, Raptors, Celtics, and Heat all had a chance. Now, I didn't pick the Heat, but I certainly thought it was possible they could win. Most years, you only think two or three teams could possibly even win. This year was different. Meantime, the Lakers. LeBron James is no one in the, look, Kareem, you can't say Kareem as an overall basketball player was inferior to LeBron at his age, in the sense that LeBron is 17 years in, better than Kareem was 17 years into Kareem's NBA career. But Kareem was the greatest college player who ever lived. And given the amount of time Kareem was in college, of course, he has more wear and tear on him and has played more basketball than LeBron by the time he's a similar age, right? So even though it's not, but like if we just eliminate college, just talk about NBA. LeBron's better 17 years into his NBA career, way better than anyone who ever lived 17 years in. No one's close. For career value in the NBA, LeBron is already the GOAT. But I don't think that's what we mean when we say GOAT. I think what we mean is not just overall career value. I think what we mean is, what was the sustainable peak of the performance? For example, Nolan Ryan was a great pitcher for like 25 years. A great pitcher. He was never as good as Sandy Koufax. Koufax had a prime that was 4 or 5 years long. But Koufax is a greater pitcher than Ryan. At least when I talk about who's the greatest, I'm talking about as long as you had a decent, it can't just be like a season or two. It can't be Bill Walton's one MVP year. But if you had a half a decade even at your peak, and your peak was the highest ever, that's, I think, what we mean when we say greatest. So Jordan's peak was the highest ever. But LeBron, let me tell you what LeBron has done. Regular season, KD in 2014 wins the MVP and deserved it. Became a much better defensive player and legitimately deserved the award. This is not like when Charles Barkley or Karl Malone would get the sympathy MVP when Jordan was in the league, because you don't want to give it to the same guy 10 times in a row. Jordan got 5. He deserved 10 easily. Like, there was no one close to him. But you don't want to do that. So you give a sympathy MVP. No, actually, KD was the MVP of the regular season that year. I was like, really? LeBron in your prime? But then at the end of the playoffs, no, LeBron's the best. Sorry, LeBron, for comparing someone to you. Then came Steph, shooting from half court, basically. Ball not sticking with him. With his handles, he was like a mobile artillery unit, shooting the lights out, leading a team to 73 wins. Sorry, LeBron, it's Steph's league. He should be the star of Space Jam 2 because it's his league. Then the playoffs came, and by the time it was over, oops, sorry, LeBron, it's your league. Then came, for me, Giannis. Oh, my God, that regular season, given LeBron's age. Look at Giannis. That playoffs ended. No, LeBron, Giannis not as good as you. And now, Kawhi. What a postseason from Kawhi. Now we're heading into the finals. Oops, sorry, LeBron, you're still the best. That's four really good contenders to the title that LeBron has now bumped off. KD, now don't tell me, oh, KD won two rings against LeBron. Shut up. KD joined a 73-win team. And at that point, no one could beat them. And the reason he did that was because he couldn't beat LeBron, and neither could the Warriors alone. They had to join forces. Even the Warriors' first title against LeBron took place without Kevin Love or Kyrie Irving. LeBron's second best player was Matthew Dellavedova. Give me a break. He'd have won that series with any help at all against the Warriors, and then he did beat him the next year when the Warriors got even better. They linked up with KD because it was an admission of by the Warriors and KD, we can't beat this guy, you know, under normal circumstances. No. Then all contenders, the smoke has settled. When the dust has settled, LeBron remains standing. And at the end of this Heat series, he will remain standing. The Lakers are going to win the championship this year. And it's because of the best player on earth who, for the second time, I didn't think KD was better than him, and I didn't believe Giannis really was until the end of that postseason. I needed to see it. But I thought Steph was better, and I thought Kawhi was better. And I was wrong both times. LeBron James remains on the throne, as he has since he took over from Kobe for, 10 years now? It's remarkable. He is the second greatest player who ever lived behind Michael Jordan. The winner of tonight's Monday Night Football game? Who's going to be the best in the AFC? Last Take next, Max Kellerman Show.
Max, the podcast.
The Max Kellerman Show on ESPN Radio, ESPN News, the ESPN app, and SiriusXM Channel 80, and on your smart speaker. Reach me at 888-SAY-ESPN, 888-729-3776. The Monday Night Football Preview is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Okay, so here we go. Also, my last take. Patrick Mahomes versus Lamar Jackson. The question has been asked for the last couple of years, is this going to be the new Tom Brady, Peyton Manning? Is this going to be the best rivalry in sports? I never thought so, because I never thought Lamar Jackson would be on Patrick Mahomes' level. However, Ryan Clark on First Take today brought up a statistic that others have cited. Lamar Jackson, because the question on First Take was, who has to be better in order to win this game? Who has to have a bigger game? And I said, really the question was, who has to have a bigger game? I said, actually, Mahomes has to have a bigger game. And that may be counterintuitive, because most people feel like the Ravens' offense is so built around Lamar Jackson, whereas Patrick Mahomes has all these weapons. You can put another quarterback in and you know, Kansas City will still score points. But how would you run that offense without Lamar Jackson? But in fact, I look at Kansas City and think, this is a team which 2 years ago, their defense stopped them from winning a Super Bowl. And in fact, they should have won the Super Bowl. Tom Brady had just thrown a pick to end the game. And the refs called it back because of a pre-snap penalty. Ridiculous. It didn't have any effect on anything. But they, you know, whatever. They blew the whistle. Patriots usually get the whistle. And they brought it back. And Mahomes never got to touch the ball again. Brady, in overtime, scores, and that's it. Chiefs should have gone to the Super Bowl, where I believe they would have beaten the Rams. But they didn't. And the fact of the matter is, at the time I thought maybe the Rams win that game, because the Rams, I just was not impressed with the Chiefs' defense. I thought the Chiefs' defense was a little bit underrated. But really, that's why I looked at them anyway, and I thought they're a little overrated, because the defense is really not quite good enough yet. Then they revamped the defense, and last year it was underrated. And it was the reason they won, really, along with Mahomes' comeback. The defense, you know, tightened the screws on the Niners in the Super Bowl. And anyway, was a little underrated throughout the season. They're pretty good. And now this year they look more like 2 years ago than they did last year. So Mahomes has to be better than ever in order to win, whereas the Ravens have given up so far in two games 22 points. That's it. The Ravens' defense can play. They're the better overall team right now. And so Mahomes, if he's going to win, is going to have to do that thing where he comes back in the game and does all these miracle things that he does all the time, right? He's going to have the bigger game. But Ryan Clark said something interesting, and I thought he actually won this debate because of it. He didn't change the question, but he changed the perspective of the question by taking a step back, by enlarging the question in a not just specific to this game, but in a larger sense, who needs to be bigger? And here's the stat that Ryan Clark cited. Lamar Jackson against the rest of the NFL in the regular season is 21-1. It's not possible. 21-1? What is this guy, 23 right now? 21-1? In your career against football? You're 21-1 in the regular season? Against Patrick Mahomes in the regular season, he's 0-2. He's as close to unbeatable in the regular season as anyone who ever lived so far. And he hasn't yet beaten Mahomes in two matchups. In a larger sense, he's got to get that monkey off his back. In a larger sense, he has to show Mahomes and himself and the world that he can compete with Patrick Mahomes with the chips on the line. And that may even go away towards boosting their confidence in the playoffs. The Monday Night Football preview is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Insurance for motorcycles, boats, and RVs for protection on the road and on the water. See how much you can save in as little as 3 minutes at 1-800-PROGRESSIVE and progressive.com. Sam in Toledo, you're on the Max Kellerman Show.
Hey, Max, how are you today?
Go ahead, Sam.
Hey, earlier in your show, and I would like some clarification on this. I would like you to back this up with stats, Max, however you want to judge a quarterback.
Yeah.
Because you said last night, had Aaron Rodgers played for the New Orleans Saints and Breeze played with the Packers, the outcome would have been different. What I saw, in addition to four terrible and egregious penalties, like a horse collar, trying to spot the ball a yard ahead for a first down, the stats will back up Drew Brees, even last night, had way better stats than Aaron Rodgers.
Well,
Completion percentage, yards, you name it.
Drew Brees was an efficient quarterback last night. But Drew Brees, and maybe it's the point in his career, but even in his prime, Drew Brees was always incredibly accurate, but he's not capable of making the same kind of plays in high-leverage moments that Aaron Rodgers can make. If you like Drew Brees, it's because you like the consistency of the accuracy. See, accuracy, really, you can have accurate quarterbacks, meaning guys who can thread the needle, but who can thread the needle all the time? Drew Brees, best I've ever seen. The consistency of the accuracy is the best I've ever seen. But Aaron Rodgers has abilities with his arm and legs that Drew Brees just hasn't. He's able to make plays, including plays last night, that make you say, no one else can do that. Well, until I saw Patrick Mahomes. I thought he can also do that consistently. And I think that was the difference in the game. Drew Brees played an efficient, really good game. It was his first good game of the season. He beat Tom Brady, but neither team nor quarterback played well. Week two, he did not play well. Week three, he played very well. I agree with you. He had a good game. Very good game. But that level, he has a level of efficiency that's super effective. Aaron Rodgers has magical powers that only Mahomes... He can make the ball do things that no one else can do. And I do think if you switched quarterbacks last night, the Packers win. Excuse me, the Saints win. Freudian slip. But, so yes, Drew Brees' stats in certain ways look better. Eyeball test as Aaron Rodgers.
Thanks for listening to the Max Kellerman Show. Make sure you subscribe, rate, and review. You can hear the show live weekdays at 2 p.m. Eastern on ESPN Radio, ESPN News, or wherever you stream your audio.